Hi, everyone. I hope you're enjoying the conference so far. So everybody here is from different areas of physics. I'm actually not really a physicist. I'm sort of more of a mathematician, I guess, so you'll have to bear with me. But I'm going to just give a really brief and simple explanation to an area that I study, which is quantum cryptography. So I'll start off just by introducing cryptography. The study of cryptography is concerned with two main goals. One of them is information privacy, and the other is authentication. And I'm just going to be talking today about information privacy. So you've probably all seen something like this before. This is just, we have the alphabet and a permutation of the alphabet. You might have done something like this when you were a kid with your friends or in school, in elementary school. Basically, you have some secret message that you want to encode for your friend, and so you take every letter in the message and you apply the permutation to each letter. And then that gives you this, what we call a ciphertext. And so then you can pass a note to your friend in class, and the other students can't read it. And your friend has the same permutation, and they can just apply the inverse and get the message back. So this is an example of something that's called private key cryptography. So this, in order for you to send a message to your friend in this way, you both have to have this shared secret information, which in this case is the permutation that you're using. So maybe you both have a table that looks something like this, and then you're able to encode your message and create the ciphertext here, and then your friend has the same table, and then they can use it to decode the message. And the idea is that anyone who has the secret key, which is this table, can encode messages and decode messages, and anyone else cannot. However, if you've ever played this game in the newspaper, you know that this isn't a particularly good encryption scheme. You can kind of just work out what the message is by just looking at patterns in the letters. You know, the E here is probably an A or an I because it's a one-letter word. And even if we remove the spaces, there's different attacks you can do by looking at which letters appear more often. So we can. This is not really used in practice. It's sort of just more for fun. But we can look at a better example of a private key encryption scheme. It's actually used in practice, and it's called the one-time pad. So just for example, Alice and Barb are together, and they have some sort of, they want to transmit some bit, so some B in the set 0 and 1. So, I mean, they're together, so I guess Alice could just give the bit to Barb, but maybe she doesn't know what it is yet. You know, maybe she knows later I'm going to want to send you a secret bit. And so they basically are going to decide when they're together that either Alice is going to send the bit or the opposite bit. She's either going to flip the bit that she sends or not flip the bit. So Alice just decides randomly, and she decides she's going to flip the bit. And then they go away, and at some later point in time, Alice decides what bit she wants to send. And because they've decided that she's going to send the flipped bit, she flips the bit, sends it over, and Barb knows it's flipped, so she just flips it back. So for example, this could be a yes or a no. So maybe they're together. Barb said, Alice, do you want to go to the mall with me later? Because that's what women are always talking about. And Alice said, well, I don't know. I will call you tonight, but sometimes my neighbors listen in to my phone calls, so we should come up with some way to make this secret. So they decide either she's going to say what she means, yes or no, or she's going to say the opposite of what she means. And if her neighbors listen in on the call, and so they see this information, they have no idea what Alice's actual answer was, because they don't know if she is giving her answer or if she's giving the opposite of her answer. So for instance, if they see a zero going by, they don't know if the bit is zero or if it's one. So they have absolutely no idea what Alice's answer is. They know nothing about the message. And this is an example of what Mike was saying about information theoretic security. If they see the message that goes by, all they can do is guess what the actual message is, which they could have done without seeing the ciphertext at all. So this is somehow perfect security, and we can generalize this Because we can encode any message as a binary string, we can generalize it to arbitrary lengths. Now, Alice and Barb have to decide for each bit, either we're going to flip the bit, which we denote as a 1, or we're not going to flip the bit, and that we denote as a 0. So they have this key, which is the same length as the message, and if the ith key bit is 1, that means they're going to flip the ith bit in the message, and if it's 0, that means they're going to leave it. So this is exactly just adding the message and the key, mod 2, gives you the ciphertext. Because if you add a 1, you're going to flip the bit, and if you add 0, you do nothing to the bit. And so Alice has her message, and she has a key, and she can come up with the ciphertext. And if she sends that to Barb, Barb also has the key, and so Barb can just get the message back in the exact same way, just by flipping bits or not flipping them as appropriate. And this is called the one-time pad, and it has perfect security in the sense that if the key is actually a uniform random string, then the ciphertext is also a uniform random string. If you look at a ciphertext, then for any possible message of that length, there's some key that would give you that message. And so this is a perfectly secure system, but the problem with it is it's actually just as difficult to secretly exchange the key as it is to secretly exchange the message. They're both some string of the same length. And so you can imagine a scenario where Alice and Barb meet and say, later we're going to want to exchange a secret message, so now we will exchange this length of key. And then they go away, and later they want to do some secure communication, and they have key. But it's not very practical for a lot of things we do. For instance, for online banking, you would basically have to go to your bank and get a bunch of key from them, and eventually you would run out of key because you can't reuse the key, or else people can detect patterns in it, and they can possibly break the encryption. So it's basically like you'd have to keep going into your bank to get more fresh key every time you wanted to do online banking, which is a little bit impractical. So the first solution we have is what your actual online banking uses is public key cryptography. And so in this, you actually have a key that is public. Now, you can't have your decryption key public because then anyone could decrypt your messages. So the solution is to have two keys. There's a public encryption key, which is used, if you have a public encryption key, then other people use it to encrypt messages to you, and you also have a decryption key, which you keep private. And you use that to decrypt a message that you receive. So, for example, in this scenario, if Alice wants to send some message to Barb, Barb broadcasts her encryption key, so it's public and everybody knows it, and she knows some secret decryption key. And so the encryption key is kind of like instructions saying, anybody who wants to send me a message, if you encode it in this way, I will be able to decode it. And so Alice can use the encryption key to somehow get a ciphertext, which she then broadcasts to Barb. And then Barb is able to use her decryption key to get the message back. So obviously the encryption and decryption keys have to be related somehow, but we hope that you can't figure out the decryption key just from looking at the encryption key. So here's just an example of something called the Diffie-Hellman public key scheme. There's some public information, which is some prime P, and G, which is a group element. In this example, we'll use the integers mod P. So Alice wants to send a message. So Barb has to send Alice a public key. So she does that by taking some random small b in the integers between 1 and p minus 1, and then she creates big B by exponentiating g to the b mod p. And so she sends that over. That's her public key, and that becomes public information now. And Alice is going to now encrypt her message m. So what she does is she also chooses some random small a in 1 to the p minus 1 and creates big A by exponentiating g. And then the way she encrypts her message is she computes g to the ab right here, which is actually big B to small a. And so then she just multiplies her message by that to get some sort of ciphertext. And she sends c and big A over to Barb. Actually, c and big A, the whole thing together is the ciphertext. And then Barb is able to get the message back. by basically, she can also compute g to the ab, because she has big A and small b. And so then she can just basically divide the ciphertext within the group to get the message back. So you might think anybody looking at the public information that, well, I mean, theoretically, they could just take the discrete log of A, big A and big B, to get small a and small b, and then they could take g to the small a and small b, and they could figure out what the message is. But actually, in maybe not in this group, but if we have a better choice of group, taking the discrete log is actually a very difficult problem. I mean, of course, we have algorithms to do it, but if you choose sufficiently large parameters and a good enough group, then it's going to take you on the order of 20 or 50 years to actually compute a discrete log. So looking at the public information, it's actually not feasible for you to break the ciphertext. But actually, if we build a quantum computer, then this becomes very easy. And every public key scheme relies on some assumption about computational power, because the private and public keys have to be related somehow. And so, I mean, there are some schemes that are not broken by quantum computers yet, but this is still not completely secure. It's certainly not information theoretically secure. It would be possible to break it. We just don't think computers can. So we have another solution, which is quantum key distribution. And this is basically just a way to have private keys, to share a secret key. Alice has a copy and Barb has a copy, without them having to meet and decide on a random key every time they want to do some secret communication. And so the way this works is we have two orthogonal bases. So this one we denote like this, and so first, Alice chooses some random bit and a random basis. And she encodes that bit in the basis according to the table in the corner. And then Barb is going to choose a random basis as well. Just by coincidence, she's chosen the same one as Alice. And so she sends, Alice encodes her state in some photon in some physics way. And she sends that over to Barb, and Barb measures it. And because Barb measured in the same basis that Alice used to encode the state, she gets the same bit that Alice chose. And so again, this time for the second bit, Alice chooses a random bit, chooses a random basis, and encodes the state. And now Barb chooses a random basis as well, and it's a different one, so she will just get a random bit out. And she happens to get the same bit as Alice, but of course it could have been either 0 or 1 with probability 1/2. And so they continue in this way. And you notice that every time Barb measures in the same basis that Alice encoded the bit in, she gets the same bit as Alice. And so eventually they have some strings, and they're done. And some of the bits in their strings are the same and some are different. So they get on the phone for some classical communication, and they can't compare their bits because obviously somebody's listening into the phone call. So instead they compare the bases that they chose. So Alice says, I chose this basis to encode my my quantum state. And Barb says, oh good, I measured in the same basis. And they go, okay, we must have the same bit. And so they keep it. For the second bit, Alice says, I use this basis to encode the state. And Barb says, oh, I measured in a different basis, so they might be different, and they discard them. And they continue comparing the bases that they use, and every time they use a different basis, they just discard that bit. And every time they use the same basis, they know they have the same bit, and they keep it. And so about half the time they use the same basis, And so they end up with a string that's about half the length of the string they started with. And they now have a shared key that they can use to do classical cryptography using the one-time pad, as I showed before. And if somebody was trying to listen in on their conversation, if they heard the classical communication about which bases were used, that doesn't help them, because it doesn't matter which basis they used, it's still, the bit could be 0 or 1 with probability 1/2. And if the eavesdropper was trying to get information from the quantum states going by, if she gained any information, then she necessarily had to disturb the state. And they can detect this, Alice and Barb, by, for instance, they could compare some of their bits that should be the same and make sure they in fact are. Or more generally, they keep some bits aside to do some special measurements on that will give them, with exponentially high probability, they'll be able to detect any kind of tampering. And so they have now an information theoretically secure way of communicating. So just, again, quantum key distribution is kind of the poster child of quantum cryptography, but there are many more areas that are of great interest that use quantum physics to make cryptographic tasks better. How does which? Oh, I see. Okay, so they can expect to get. So they each randomly choose a basis. So there's two cases where they choose a different basis, right? And there's two cases where they choose the same basis. So half the time they choose the same basis, and then they keep the bit. So they get to keep about 50% of the string that way. And then there's also in actual practice, there's some small amount of the string that they use to check that no tampering has been done as well.